You're listening to RMU Radio, your campus, your voice. Ben Cole with you alongside Nick Buzzelli and Dante Verme. We're very excited today to bring you a lot of sports. Normally, we try to make this a well-rounded show, and for the most part, it is. But, you know, we're at the time now in the school year where a lot of sports is going on. We've got men's hockey that we're going to be talking about right now. We've got men's and women's basketball that we're going to touch on a little bit later. But playoffs. But the one thing that we want to touch on right now is men's hockey. We are still kind of in limbo for who is going to come to the 84 Lumber Arena and play the Colonials. They got the top seed in the division. So we have a little bit of time.
Yeah.
And here's what the lineup is right now for the games. It's Army versus Sacred Heart, Niagara versus Holy Cross, and American International versus Air Force. They all play best of three, and then the lowest seed comes to play Robert Morris. Mm-hmm. Buzz, I'll ask you, out of those teams right now, who do you want to play Robert Morris the most?
I'm gonna go with American International.
American International, based on are they the lowest seed?
No, they're not. Niagara is the lowest seed.
Niagara's the lowest
yes.
seed. Okay.
Do you want me to elaborate a little bit?
Yes, I would love for you to elaborate a little bit.
I wasn't really prepared to answer this question, and I haven't been keeping up on my Atlantic Hockey standings. So
shame on you.
I know, shame on me. But they were the one team that I did see play this year. And
what was one thing that you liked about them?
I don't really remember.
You don't remember. Okay, Dante.
Can
I'll
pass
take
to
you.
Dante.
Dante. I'll pass off to you.
I think it's for AIC, it's the team for the Colonials I would like to see them get matched up with. I don't want to see them get matched up with Niagara because Niagara always plays them tough. AIC can score a lot. The problem is for them, they have two players. It's Brandon Lubin and Austin Orzulak. Orzulak, I think, is top five in the country in goals.
Uh-huh.
But on the back end, their defense is very, very, very bad.
Yeah.
And we can expose that. They're kind of like the situation the Pens are, where Lubin and Orzulak are like Sid and Malkin, and then the scoring drops very quickly after that. Their goaltending's not bad, but it's just their defensive side's really not up to par to handle what Robert Morris can throw at them. So if I was going to play any team, I hope the Colonials will get AIC. I do not want to see them get Air Force, which I don't believe is possible because they're the number six seed, and that there's mathematically they won't see them until if both teams make it to Rochester.
Here's one question that I have. They're not going to play a game. Robert Morris is not going to play a game until possibly February 13th, or I'm sorry, March 13th or March 14th. Right now we're on a little bit of a hiatus. It's March 5th right now. So do the math and you'll figure out how many days that is. That's a little bit of a gap in between when their next game is.
Yeah.
I looked at their schedule. They haven't had this long of a gap since the Three Rivers Classic.
Yeah.
Which was back in December. So for these guys to keep going nonstop from January until the end of February, and now they're pretty much in limbo. Mm-hmm. These guys haven't played a game they're not going to play a game for a very long time.
Yeah, and I did the recap for the senior day game against Niagara and getting to talk to Dalton Isaac. He was asked about how is the two-week break going to, you know, affect the team. Him and Cody Whitebo said it's something they need. There's some players that aren't going at 100%, and they need to get ready, you know, physically and mentally, take the little bit of time to get ready for the playoff run, because the playoff run is going to be tough. It's not going to be very easy. There's you know, it's going to be, you know, three games, and then if you lock it, a maximum of three games next weekend. But if
we have to say that this is a best of three games.
Yeah, and then after that, it's you go all out for two games in Rochester, and whatever happens, happens. If you punch your ticket, you punch your ticket for the big dance. I mean, last year at Rochester, it was unbelievable. There was an instance I remember where I believe it was there were three goals scored on three consecutive shots in the championship game between Robert Morris and Canisius. It was unreal. So for those guys, they're going to be going all out for the next, 2 weeks. And I think to have this 2 weeks off and to get ready mentally and physically probably is going to be a huge factor. Some teams can't handle it that well. Bentley especially has been notorious for finishing in the top end, getting a bye, and then crashing out in the second round.
So is it better that we have the bye? Is it better that, maybe we could have hoped that the team didn't perform very well this year, just so that they could have a lengthy tournament, just so that they can consistently, play game after game after game.
It's interesting. It's the first time Rob Morris has ever had a bye, ever, if I remember correctly.
So, I believe so, yeah.
So, none of the players are going to know how to react. We're not going to know how to react until 7:07 Friday night when the puck drops at the 84 Lumber Arena.
I don't think even the Penguins ever have a very long time, or even the Capitals.
No, but that's the pros. That's a little bit different. What's going to be nice, I think, is that because the way it's scheduled, and this has frustrated me for the last 4 years, is that usually the first round always takes place the weekend spring break starts, so no one goes to those games.
Right.
Those games are empty, and now coming on the back end, those things are going to be full, like a huge crowd. Like Friday was standing room only, and it was absolutely incredible.
Right. Well, do you think having a raucous crowd will bring about a little bit more create a little bit better of an atmosphere?
Oh yeah, and you can tell it affects the players. They get pretty riled up when we have a crowd like that.
Right. So that obviously it has to bring a little bit more
zing. Yeah.
So, well, let's hope that we actually have a decent showing for these guys.
Oh yeah,
and hopefully they actually have a decent team to play against.
Interesting note: they got presented the Atlantic Hockey regular season trophy. No one touched it.
I would kind of figure that nobody
it's
would want to touch that thing.
I was interested to see who was going to touch it and who was not going to touch it.
Well, this is the first time that they've actually won this thing.
Yeah, the first time
so,
they won the regular season.
Yeah, they're definitely not going to
touch it. No.
No.
They took their team photo. They had the SID, put it down in front of them, and everyone was, in so many words. Like, don't touch it.
So even the SID touched it.
The SID touched it. I got to touch it.
You touched it?
Yeah. I didn't want to touch it, but they're like, you can touch it. I'm like, all right, I'm going to touch it. I'm sorry.
So if the team goes to pot,
I'm gonna feel awful.
We're gonna look at you at A number one.
You shouldn't have admitted that. Now we're just a scapegoat here.
I might have to bring in Wido.
Oh,
I might have to bring in Wido for him to give you a little bit of a talking to. Okay.
Okay.
All right. We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens with that. We're gonna take a break. Whenever we come back, Chris Capella is going to join us. He is the RMU radio voice for our men's basketball broadcast. He's going to recap last night's shellacking the Colonials gave to Wagner and preview Saturday's game. You're listening to RMU Chat on RMU Radio, your campus, your voice. You're listening to RMU Chat on RMU Radio, your campus, your voice. Ben Cole, Nick Bozzelli, and Dante Verme. Mike Funyak has the day off.
No, he's in Cleveland.
That's why he has the day off, because
well,
he is in Cleveland.
You could mention why
Okay, so he's traveling to Cleveland before the, what, club hockey?
Yeah, the ACHA team's playing in their Nationals.
Do we have a score update on that, Dante?
Last I saw at the end of two was 3-0 Niagara.
And that's not a good thing.
No.
That's not a good thing. But one good thing is that the RMU men's basketball team won last night in the NEC tournament, beating Wagner. And we have Chris Capella joins us right now for our little bit of a recap. Chris, thank you very much for joining us.
Ben, thanks for having me. You know, I usually get to talk about Army Radio on the radio, but by myself when I do my show or during the broadcast with Jay, so it's nice to have a little company with me as well this time.
Of course. So, very big game, very convincing win for the men against a Wagner team that, you know, they've had a little bit of a back and forth with this season, but mm-hmm. were able to take it to them this night. Talk about Lucky Jones. Had a career game last night, and overall this season, he's been a real big story for the Colonials. He started the season in the starting five,
mm-hmm.
and now he's riding a little bit of the pine at the beginning of the game, coming on periodically. Tell me about his transition this season.
Yeah, Lucky was a guy I think a lot of people had big expectations for. Came into the season as a preseason NEC first team selection. And then I know a lot of people around this area and really guys who cover the NEC kind of expected him to make the jump and contend for player of the year this season. He was going to be the primary focus of a team. He's shown glimpses in the past of his game of being a great three-point shooter, someone who draws a lot of fouls, is the team's best rebounder, is the team's best defender. So the expectations were pretty high for him. Unfortunately, this team just couldn't get it going early, and Lucky was a large part of that. You know, he really struggled shooting the ball at the beginning of the season. Tool was trying to mix and match with a lot of new pieces, what type of starting lineups might work. So Lucky obviously starts a year in the starting lineup. They mix and match a little bit. He starts coming off the bench for a few games. That didn't really help too much either. And then just recently, you know, 3 weeks ago, he gets suspended for a violation of team rules. He misses two games, and he's come back since, coming off of the bench, not in the starting lineup. And the dude's been fantastic. He drops 27 last night, which was tied for a career high on 8 of 12 shooting. He's shooting with a lot of confidence. He's finding his shot from the three ball. And even more than that, it's a stark contrast from last year, where at the end of the season, he was really struggling. And at this time, he's playing perhaps some of the best basketball of his life at the right time.
Do you think Andy Toole putting him on the bench was more of a motivator for him? Was this kind of already expected for Lucky for the performance that he was going to have
right,
this season?
Right, right. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if anybody really has that answer. I think at the very least, him coming off of the bench does kind of provide some matchup problems for teams, because he's coming in, other teams are substituting, it's maybe not their strongest lineups, and here comes Lucky, who has the versatility to play guard or forward and is just providing so much for the team. I don't know if it motivated him so much. I think more of a motivating factor was just his overall play mm-hmm. this season, because he didn't live up to his own expectations and he didn't live up to the expectations anybody else really set for him. So I think more than anything, you know, he's motivated by his performance and he's motivated by not being able to get into the big dance yet. He's had a great career. He's won a lot of big games. He's accomplished a lot personally, but the big dance has been elusive. And that's what it's really come down to. You know, this is it. This is go time. He's got, at the most, two more games left in his collegiate career at Robert Morris. If you don't get to the big dance now, you're never going to get that experience.
Yeah. Let's talk about the transition that the team as a whole has had this season. You were talking about expectations for Lucky, but let's talk about the expectations for the team. We didn't think that, you know, they were going to be in this type of situation. And Andy Toole didn't think that they were going to be in this type of situation as well. It seems like there were a couple locker room issues.
Oh, yeah.
And you have Lucky violating some team rules. But one bright spot from this season was, you know, we actually are making a strong improvement in the tournament right now.
Yeah.
Andy Toole had his 100th win this season. So there were a couple bright spots in this season.
Yeah, there really were. I think while Robert Morris lost a lot last year, right? So they lose Carvell Anderson, who's player of the year. They lose Anthony Myers-Pate, who's their starting point guard, who is such a rock for them. They have a few guys leave the team early in the season who play big roles, like Chuck Oliver, who's a three-point specialist. Their backup point guard, Jafar Kinsey, quits the team in the middle of the year. So they did battle a lot of adversity, but that's kind of the norm with the NEC this season as a conference that lost a ton moving forward. So really every team, we're talking about inexperience for Robert Morris, that's every single team in this conference for the most part is truly inexperienced. So I always kind of felt like they had the talent level to compete. I had them actually pegged as the NEC favorite going into the season just based on the pure talent that they had. The talent has always been there, but like you talked about, Ben, it's just, you know, the mental thing. There's such a big difference, you know, because there are so many skilled players, but you have to get it mentally. You know, you have to prepare, you have to play with energy, you have to want to compete, you have to do the little things to win basketball games at this level. They play a really tough schedule at the start of the year, and they found out the hard way that those things don't always transfer over. That was the biggest problem for them. One advantage Robert Morris does have, like you said, is Andy Toole.
Yeah.
He's the best coach in this conference. He didn't win Coach of the Year, but he is the best coach in this conference. And if there was one guy who, throughout all the struggles, you could say, you know what, Robert Morris has a chance to turn this around, it's because of their head coach, who always has his team pretty much ready to play at their highest level. So that's a big deal, especially at this time of the year. Coaching is such an important part of this game, and Tool's the best coach.
Yeah. You talked a little bit earlier, just right there, about the beginning of the season. They played Clemson. They played North Carolina at the beginning of the season.
Georgetown.
Georgetown as well. Buzz, you went down to cover a couple of those games. From seeing that those teams that played the non-conference big boys compared to the team that we saw last night against Wagner, how have they changed?
I mean, I don't know if you could necessarily say they changed a whole lot. I mean, I don't think non-conference games against major, you know, top five powerhouse schools are kind of a good indicator, because, you know, the performance you're going to get on the court against the North Carolina, against the Georgetown, is probably competing against an ACC team, a Big East team, is, you know, they're not going to have their best showing, but if you take that same performance in a conference game, you know, it could probably be good enough to win.
Right.
But I think, you know, the biggest thing, it's kind of like the same team, the North Carolina game, what Marquise, he had, what, 25 that game?
Yeah, I think something like that. He was outstanding.
Yeah, he was leading scorer in that entire game for both teams. So I think you kind of seen flashes early on in the year, like, hey, this is what it's going to be. Lucky struggled that game. It was kind of like you were saying, going back to, he struggled the first couple games. But like I said, I think they've been the same team. It's just that for a small school, for a small conference such as the NEC, playing non-conference games compared to conference games, there's just so much of a difference. I mean, Chris, you could probably attest to that as well.
And I think Nick brings up a good point. When you do play those big teams like Georgetown, Clemson, North Carolina especially, you kind of see the glimpses of what your team's all about. So we saw Marquise Ree go off against UNC. I think we realized before then he was going to be a good player, but the talent that he oozed out against top talent in that game was outstanding. And even more than that, when we're not talking about those major power conference teams, every team that Robert Morris played, with the exception of Youngstown State, would probably win the Northeast Conference this year. We're talking about the Lafayettes, the Toledos, teams along those lines are really good. Buffalo was another really good team that came in here. I mean, they played a really tough non-conference schedule that didn't just involve those three major teams, but we saw Lafayette game one come into the Chuck, and they crushed Robert Morris. They beat him by 30 points. They put on a clinic against RMU, and that was a big wake-up call. So, you know, like we've seen in the past, non-conference play, it's important, but it's not the end-all be-all. This is the time that you have to win. It's important when it comes to seedings, if you're able to make it to the NCAA tournament and things like that. But this is when you have to be playing your best basketball.
Exactly. Chris Capella joins us on RMU Chat, recapping the RMU Colonials shellacking of Wagner last night. Moving on to play Bryant in the quarter. Is it the quarterfinals?
Yeah,
semifinals. Goodness, of the NEC tournament. Chris, the one nice thing about the NEC is it doesn't seem like there's a clear-cut favorite this year. And I know that that's a good thing, and I know that that's a bad thing as well. But how, for Robert Morris, how is that an advantage?
I think it's an advantage in a way that any team can beat anybody on it in any given way. And it's an advantage and a disadvantage, because Robert Morris could lose to a team like Long Island twice this year, who is the 8 seed. but they can go out, and we saw they've beaten Mount St. Mary's, who was the 4 seed, twice. They split with Bryant, who's the 3 seed, and they've split with St. Francis Brooklyn, who's a 1 seed. They've proven that they can beat every team in this conference.
Yeah.
They've also proven that they can lose to every team in the conference. It just kind of goes back to those things where the team has to be engaged. They have to want to be there to play basketball, as odd as that sounds, but from what we've seen this year, they don't always seem to want to play basketball games, right, Buzz?
It's like I said, it's kind of hit or miss with this team, and that's kind of the common motif through all year. You know, like one game you'll have them, they'll come out, they'll build up a lead, and then, you know, they'll kind of surrender that lead in the second half. And sometimes they'll find a way to win, sometimes they won't, but I think it all depends. But yeah, like you're saying, it's anything could happen. That's the one great thing about March, you know?
Yeah.
That's going back to what the NCAA tournament's all about, and same thing with the NEC tournament. Anyone can beat anyone on any given day, and it's a matter of see what will happen.
We've seen it the past few years now where Robert Morris has been the best team in the NEC throughout the regular season. They've gotten far into the NEC tournament, and they've gotten beat by Mount St. Mary's team the past few years, who for most of the season was not better than them. But Mount St. Mary's at that time was playing the best basketball in the conference. They were the hottest team.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what it comes down to, who's playing their best basketball right now. Right now, Robert Morris and the NEC is playing the best basketball. I don't even think it's that close, honestly, with the way they're shooting, with the way that they're capable of defending. They obviously have some of their deficiencies on the team, but their offense is making up for it. I mean, everybody's clicking at the right time.
So tip-off for this game against Bryant is at noon Saturday in the Sewell Center. Chris, give us one thing for the Colonials to look out for against Bryant.
They have to rebound. They really do. Rebounding, when we're talking about the deficiencies, Robert Morris isn't a good rebounding team. They have Aaron Tate, who's 6'5", who anchors the middle of their zone defense, and he's an outstanding rebounder, but he's limited. He's 6'5". In the Wagner game yesterday, two possessions in a row, he came down with a rebound and was rubbing the top of his head because guys who are 6'10" and 6'11" are coming down on him trying to grab rebounds. Yeah. You know, so those are the types of things. Steven Bennett's not a good rebounder. Leo Gomez isn't a good rebounder. Elijah Minney's a pretty good rebounder, but he's a freshman. He's working his way up there. But Bryant has some guys who can really hit the boards. Joe O'Shea is a good rebounder. Dan Garvin is. Bosco Castor, who's a 6'7" redshirt freshman, is a kind of a two-way player. He can stretch the floor a little bit as well. So those are the things they have to keep an eye out on. They have to defend the perimeter okay with Diami Starks, who's a dynamic player for Bryant, averaging about 18.5 points per game, I believe, which was tops in the NEC. He's also a gunner. I think they've got a rebound. You cannot give Bryant, who's a really good offensive team, multiple possessions to score because it's going to cost you. And that's what we saw the last time Bryant was in the Chuck. That's what cost Robert Morris. They didn't rebound well at all, and they lost the game.
Last question, and I'll let you go out on this. Does Andy Toole start Lucky Jones?
No, he's not gonna mix anything up at this point. And what's made this so effective, I was just talking about this, was Elijah Minney's now starting for Lucky Jones. And this whole thing wouldn't be working if Elijah Minney wasn't rebounding at the rate he was and wasn't doing enough things offensively. Like his pick and pop, pick and roll game, like stepping out the three-point line, hitting some threes, has been tremendous. So Minney playing the way that he has allowed Lucky Jones to come off the bench and be effective. That's been a huge, huge, huge role for the young freshman who's really growing up.
Tip-off for this game is at noon, and we're going to try to give Chris a little bit of elbow room on press row so he can broadcast this game on rmuradio.com with Jason Frank. We're gonna hope for the best if we get you on press row. Chris, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Ben.
We're going to take a break. Whenever we come back, John Fisher is in the RMU green room, and he just interviewed Gregory DeLomo today, the president, the outgoing president, and we want to know what he had to say today. You're listening to RMU Chat on RMU Radio, your campus, your voice. RMU Chat on RMU Radio, your campus, your voice. I want to thank Chris Capello for joining us, Ben Cole, Nick Bozzelli, and Dante Verme. No Funyak. Funyak is in Cleveland. Do we have any new updates on the...
It is now 3-1 Niagara.
Okay, so we're on the upswing.
Yeah, we're on the upswing.
The slow and progressive upswing.
Don't call it a comeback.
Don't call it a comeback just yet. John Fisher joins us. Last week he had his sports hat on. Now we have his news hound hat on. And you had a sit-down interview today with President Gregory DeLomo.
I did, with Dylan McKenna, who's right out there.
Yes, yes. You guys did a wonderful job, as I've heard. He's getting close to his the time where he's going to be leaving. Is he getting any more reminiscent? Is he starting to kind of realize that his time here is a getting shorter by the day?
This is his
last spring break too. So.
It is, and you know him being the party animal, he goes down to Barbados every March to enjoy the sunlight and the pop. The beverages. No, in all seriousness, talking to him earlier this morning, it really wasn't about, are you ready to leave? I purposely didn't ask him that question because, well, of course he's ready to leave. He's leaving in a month and a half or 2 months. So I felt like that was a moot question. It really didn't make sense. But I did ask him what he's going to miss the most. And simply in one word, he said, the family environment. You know, Robert Morris is a close-knit group. You know, you talk to one person, oh, they know a student that you know through another student that they know. And being around 5,000 students, give or take a few, including the master's and doctoral program, you get to know everybody. And I think that's the great thing about this university. Not just, from the perspective of, oh, I know this student, but you get to know the professors too. And President DeLomo, I mean, my goodness, you see him all the time in the cafeteria, in Romo's, at basketball games. He won't go to hockey games because he's afraid they'll lose when he's there. He has his record is unbelievably, ask him about that next time you see him. He had to email Derek Schooley, head coach Derek Schooley of the AHC champion Colonials, and tell him the reason he doesn't go to the games is due to his horrible record when he's there. So he watches every game, but besides the point, I think he's ready, but it wasn't something that I was going to bring up, because, I mean, of course he's ready, right?
Yeah, yeah. Now, we know that the presidential search committee is up and running. We know that he has nothing to do with this. He's not going to help in any process at all, but did he have any statement for you?
As far as the transition... I didn't talk to him about this, but I talked to Provost Jameson. They're going to roll with the punches and see what happens. I mean, you know, it's extremely hard to go from a president like Gregory DeLomo, who is the ultimate people person, truly a visionary, a change maker, a difference maker, to someone that can do that and more. I haven't personally gone and asked the search committee what they're going to look for, but I'm going to have to assume that they're going to have to look for somebody with the same qualities, a lot of vision, just like President DeLomo did, but more so because the new 5-year plan started recently.
Yeah.
And now President DeLomo is leaving for Rider University, so someone's going to have to take that plan, amend whatever changes that they need to, and adjust accordingly.
And we already know that some of that, like you just said, some of the 5-year plan is already underway. We're seeing construction on the School of Nursing. There's possibilities of the Sewell Center being renovated. There's rumors that we could have new athletic facilities come on campus, more housing. So those are things that the president is going to have to, be ready for.
And that all started from his time at St. Joseph's University out in Philadelphia. He talked about, if you've ever been to St. Joe's, I have not, but I've seen pictures that it's long jammed. There's no room to build. And while St. Joe's is a beautiful campus, a top-notch athletic program, not to mention the educational programs too, you could build here. And that's one of the first things that President DeLomo did. There's a ton of it, and I don't know if it's all of theirs. Past Wheatley, past the new nursing building down over the hill. I don't know if it's theirs or not. I didn't ask if that's their property. However, it can easily become their property if they want to pursue it. You can build for, I would say, at least 10, 12 to 15 more acres.
Yeah.
The land is there. And when he first got here, he says, oh, we can make some changes here.
Yeah.
And what did he do? He came in here and he did that.
Now, one thing that I have asked Buzz, Mike Funyak, and Dante, and anybody that has come on here that's touched a little bit on the DeLomo story, is while he's leaving, there is going to be that new president. And John, I'll ask you this. What do you want to see in the new president for RMU?
I don't think it's possible, at least right now, to find somebody that can match what he did. Because he was here 10 years, and in those 10 years, you look at a side-by-side picture of Robert Morris in 2005 and Robert Morris in 2015, there is an exponential difference in what President DeLomo brought to the table. I think they need somebody with the same personables. They have this, you know, who is as personable, if I could try to talk this morning. I have to be on a show tonight. They need somebody with a vision as well, because what President DeLomo did, beyond compare, one of the best presidents that I've ever witnessed. You know, they need someone that can also work with a budget, because there's no doubt. While the economy has improved since 2008, I mean, that's an obvious statement right there. It's not hard. Tuition is going to keep going up by 1 or 2% every year, which is extremely low, by the way. Extremely low increase in tuition rate. They need someone that's going to be able to make sure the students are happy, make sure student life is successful. There's a lot of variables. Being the president of a university is an extremely hard task, and there's only a few that can do it. And the search committee has to take extra precaution in trying to fill the most important position at this university.
John Fisher joins us. He talked to President DeLomo today. John, one big thing that we always hear whenever somebody leaves is their legacy. What do they want to be remembered for? I know that you asked him about that, and I asked him whenever I sat down with him to talk about, you know, him leaving. And one thing that I specifically asked him not to mention was sidewalks. I know he's very proud of the fact that Robert Morris is a very walkable campus that has relatively wide sidewalks. What does he want to be remembered for?
For someone that, if I remember correctly, that carried out his vision, and he made RMU a family. I remember back in 2002 when you, when you were at Point Park back in 2002.
Oh, no, I was in high school.
Well, good, I didn't do my research on you. That wasn't my job.
You're showing my age now.
You're only 24, right?
Yeah, sure.
So in 2005, when he first came here, there were two buildings downtown, and we all know the great performing arts school that is Point Park, right down the street, give or take a couple of blocks. Now it's one campus.
Mm-hmm.
The buildings for the master's program are still down there, and that's great. However,
undergraduate community is all in
exactly.
One area.
They don't want to come to school and then take a van 40 minutes down the parkway, not to mention during traffic. I can't even bring Funyak into the conversation. He and I can go on for hours. You can't do that. That's not what a campus is like. You know, you have a Pitt, you have a Penn State, you have a Point Park, all in central locations despite their branch campuses. They're Robert Morris, in order to grow, they needed to centralize, and they did. And I think, you know, he didn't narrowly say, I want to be remembered by this, that, or the other thing. It was a combination of things, and one of them is certainly the sidewalks. The other is definitely the fact that he made this a family. He made this a home to many people, and didn't act like he was the all high and mighty President DeLomo.
Sure,
he was President DeLomo, the man I had lunch with yesterday.
And you also have to talk about the athletics program as well. I mean, we just had Chris Capella come on and talk about the men's basketball program. We also have a very strong women's program. The ice hockey program has grown exponentially over the last few years, and the football program is there. The athletics has significantly improved on here as well under his time.
Are you kidding me?
I know.
Absolutely.
A little bit.
You know, I'm not exactly sure if he had, like, a first hand in the athletic program being built. However, I know Craig Coleman does a fantastic job. He's the athletic director at his job. He had Jim Duzik, who heads men's basketball and a couple of other sports. I think it was a group effort. And
I want to say that the president has to come in and say, okay, I see that we have a couple of pitfalls here. What do we need to do to make this better?
Absolutely. I could not agree more. Let's just take men's basketball, for example. They peaked in the 80s with Tripper Harris, one of the best of all time, and then kind of hit a roadblock after roadblock after roadblock. And finally, in the late 2000s, 3 to 4 years after he got there, titles. Mike Rice winning 2 NEC championships in only a few years. That's one thing. So men's basketball, you know, turned it on. The Villanova game back in 2010.
Yep.
No one will ever forget that.
Yeah.
Just like the Kentucky game 2 years ago.
I was going to say, do we have to mention that we beat Kentucky?
No, we don't. That's a beaten to the ground.
And also you have to mention what Andy Toole has been able to do in his time here.
I think that's a little bit more controversial as far as his success goes.
But still.
No, you're absolutely right.
If you talk about the success of the basketball program, Andy Toole's name has to be brought in there.
Of course.
And obviously DeLoma was probably somewhat helpful in bringing in Andy Toole.
He absolutely was, and he was an assistant before he turned head coach whenever yep. Mike Rice left for Rutgers.
Yep.
With all the adversity that the men's basketball team has faced, just to you know, comment on this for just a brief moment, truly astounding what they were able to do. And I don't know a lot of coaches that can take a seven-person team due to injuries and whatnot and take them to the second round of the NIT to defeat a number one seed in the NIT 2 years in a row. That's one thing. But the hockey team, I'm going to let Dante comment on that if he wants to. Unbelievable.
Yep.
Yeah, the women's team my freshman year in 2011-2012 beat Mercyhurst twice in a row after not defeating them in, I think, 30 straight games.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing. Paul Colantino taking care of his alma mater. Alma mater in terms of coaching. He was an assistant there.
His school, too. He went to Mercyhurst.
He did go to Mercyhurst, yeah. too. Okay, so, yeah. That's one thing. A women's hockey turned a corner. Men's hockey turned a corner. An NCAA tournament birth last year. The Frozen Four came to Pittsburgh. I understand the Penguins have a lot to do with it.
But RMU was the host.
The host, absolutely. And you had to imagine President Obama having something to do with that.
Yeah. Yep.
You have volleyball winning a couple championships, you know, women's basketball going to the NCAA tournament, men's basketball turning a corner every single year, doing amazing things. And on top of that, you know, despite the loss of a few sports here, the athletic program is still thriving.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's most important.
Mm-hmm. And a lot's more going to thrive in the years to come with the new president.
I mean, you have to think so, sure.
Yes. John Fisher, thank you very much for joining us.
No problem. Anything else you want to ask me? I have some time.
Oh, no. I think we're good. I think we're good.
You don't want to ask me anything else? Anything that's on your mind, hard-pressed, the issues of the world, whether that be television or Disney, anything along those lines, you're going to look at me with that stoic face of insecurity and irresponsibility and talk to me about my favorite TV shows.
Yeah, I'm good.
How about that for a soliloquy? Wasn't that nice?
I'm good. We'll be looking forward to the latest Century Countdown whenever you get to it.
You would go there.
Well, you know.
I have one last thing to say.
Yes, sir.
Just keep it quiet.
Keep it quiet. We're going to take a break. Whenever we come back, Dante and I are going to figure something out since it's just the two of us now. We're buzzless also, buzz bounced. So, yeah, we're going to take a break, and we're going to recap a little bit for off-air to see what we can talk about. So, it's going to be fun. You're listening to RMU Chat on RMU Radio, your campus, your voice.
kind of nerve-wracking. And welcome back to Army Chat on Army Radio. Your campus, your voice.
The struggle is real with that.
We are so close to spring break that the struggle is so real today.
Yeah, we do have to make a programming note that we are not.
We won't be here next week.
We will not be here next week because of spring break, but after that we have 8 shows left of this semester. 8 shows that Dante and Nick and Mike are going to be joining me, and it's going to be...
And we're Nick and Mike-less right now, too.
Yes. Which kind of stinks, but at the same time, I'm stuck.
We have Vince Russo.
We do have Vince Russo. This is right. Vince Russo is our Century Media correspondent for women's basketball, and hey, he's also a wonderful host of a handful of shows here on RMU Radio.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, my buddy Colin Sullivan and I. Colin's the real MVP of Colonial Talk, which is on Tuesdays from 6 to 8 now, because we've got a time change.
Yes, a little programming note for them.
Yeah. But I understand we're going to talk some women's hoops.
Yeah. So there's so much about this women's team that wasn't really, certain with Artemis Spanou leaving and all the trials and tribulations that happened early in the season with a few players leaving the squad. Yet they finished in the 3 seed and they get Fairleigh Dickinson. Is that a win for them this season after everything they've gone through with the losing of a few players, having to try and fill the void that was the 4 years Artie was here?
I would definitely say that this season, even if it did happen to end in an upsetting loss to FDU, which hopefully will not happen Sunday at 1 p.m. here at the Chuck, a good season overall for the women's team. A lot of turbulence, as you said. Obviously, when I took over this beat, the main question that everyone asked and all my editors wanted me to ask was life after Artemis. What is going to happen now? And I had the optimistic and tried to write my stories optimistically that this team now can take on a new identity and do some different things. Everything kind of revolved around the post game and around Artemis in the past, but now we see players blossoming, and every sign thought that Cassie Owsler would step into a big role. Obviously, she's transferred to Buffalo very quickly early on in the season, but we saw players like Ananiki Stamolampru come out and take the NEC by storm. If she's not first team All-NEC, then I would expect her probably to get most improved, but at least find herself on the second team, a huge bump up from last year. And players like Judith Soleil coming out of nowhere, getting into great shape, posting 4 or 5 double-doubles on the season. And you see a Colonial team that's deeper this year, 8 of 11 underclassmen. There's at least 7-8 games where 10 out of the 11 players on the roster scored in a game. The rotation is incredibly deep, and what makes this team so hard to play against is, as a coaching's perspective, you try to game plan, say you, okay, we're going to shut down Ananiki, we're going to shut down Ravelli, and maybe even Soleil, but then you have to account for, well, what if, Janae's able to take it to the hole? What if Lou Madley is able to shoot the ball effectively? And this team has some tough, gritty inside players, has a lot of talented perimeter shooters. Even Soleil can step out and hit the three-point shot. So overall, with losing players, with injuries, this team, even with their record where it is now and what they've accomplished, they had so many opportunities to accomplish more. They had Xavier on the ropes early in the non-conference slate, a Big East team, and let that one slip. They let a couple games slip in overtime against Youngstown State and Cornell, a couple bigger schools. So this team was very close to getting some signature wins in the non-conference, and I expect them to do that within the next couple years. And they've come together quite nicely after a 2-9 start to, the last game they had an opportunity to be co-champions and really let one slip against Wagner. Hopefully they're able to regain their focus. I know I've talked to the players, and they said that practice this week has been really tough after that loss. Coach just trying to instill in them that it's going to take, maximum effort. You can't just walk into the postseason tournament and walk your way through. And I think the young players, as I said, 8 of 11 underclassmen, still need to learn that you can't take one day off at a Division I level.
You think with the playoffs coming up, and you said the young team, you think they're going to be able to live up or step up in those pressure situations, Megan Smith winning her third NEC Rookie of the Week award, and you have young players as Stamolampru and Navarro who've been there. This team is so young, and there's so much talent that you can see coming forward, but do you think this year is a year where they push forward, especially in the NEC, trying to return back to the dance?
I think they have as good a chance as anyone. You know, the two seeds in front of them, they split series with. They just dropped one to Bryant a little while ago, which was another close game. The games against Bryant, both of them were incredibly close. I think both three-point games. I know the first one was here at home. But I digress. The team has stacked up well against everyone in conference, had a 13-game winning streak in conference, had a 17-game home unbeaten streak in the conference that was just snapped in the last game that lost to Wagner. But they have the experience in some sense with Ravelli, with Lou, with Olagande, their lone senior, players that have done it before. And as you said, the sophomores on this team were very heavily involved with what happened last year. As far as Anna Nikki, as far as Rebecca Navarro, they had to do it last year under the mentorship of Artemis Spanou. And while she is gone, she is definitely not forgotten. When I talk to players after games, she's still sending text messages. She's still involved in the chemistry of this team and in the daily ins and outs of this team. She's still very much a factor, even as an alumni. So I think they've got as good a chance as any. I think it's going to be one of the three top seeds. I don't think we're going to see a lower seed progress very far in this tournament, even though we just saw a team like Wagner pull off an upset. There's a big, big disparity between the top three teams in the conference and everyone else. And it's going to, you know, if the seeds hold true, they'll get Bryan in the next round and then CCSU in the final. And they have a good shot, but they're going to be very, very evenly contested games. The effort's going to need to be much higher, and they're going to have to execute on those little things. If they're young and those nerves start creeping in either of those games, it could be detrimental because every possession is going to matter that much more in those games.
Vince, you said that this is a team that is relatively young. Because of the youthness, do you think, you know, losing to Wagner and now that's even more motivation for these girls to keep moving? Do you think just because this is a young team, do you think they can play with a we-have-nothing-to-lose attitude now?
I don't know that they'll necessarily take up that attitude, but I know that they're highly motivated. Coach Sal tore into them after the last game. I interviewed him after the game, and Coach Sal notoriously kind of brief in his responses with the media. I was with a reporter from the Trib, and each one of us asked him one question, and we got about 6 minutes of quotes from him. And I know the one quote that he put was, you know, this is game 29. This isn't, you know, game 3, game 4. This team isn't young anymore. So he doesn't have that expectation out of them anymore. He doesn't use that as an excuse that this team is young. Granted, this is their first postseason experience at a Division I level, but, you know, they've had 29 games under their belt. They've played the 18th best team in the nation, Iowa from the Big Ten. They've played a couple other Big Ten schools like Illinois. They've played Big East, Ivy League. They've played tough teams. They've went through a whole conference slate. Every team that they're seeing, they've already saw before. They know what to expect from that team. There's going to be a little bit, obviously, of a different mentality with a winner go home. But this is those times, or these are those times, rather, where you lean on leaders like Ravelli, Stamolampreau, people who've been there, done that, got the T-shirt, so to speak, and you know, just follow their lead, follow instructions, and trust that those people are going to get you in the position that you need to be in to get the victory.
And in a post-Artemis team, Artemis was such a strong leader, and we're seeing still some of her hands still a little bit in here, just in a coaching from a far away, and just giving some advice for these players on this roster now. Who has been that leader that has stepped up and taken the Artemis role?
Vocally, it has been Ashley Ravelli. She's a very outspoken player in and out of the locker room, fiery competitor. You know, before she was suspended for a violation of team rules, she had started in 87 straight games, I believe, a record for the program. So her leadership is invaluable because she's been a three-year starter, and she's been through all the rigor. She played 3 years with Artemis, or yeah, 2 years with Artemis Spanou. And obviously learned a lot from her, and kind of unanimously was put into that role going forward. But I've heard a lot of players talk about the leadership that just comes from the example that Anna Nikki Stamolampreau sets. Tireless work effort, tireless passion on the court. You know, one of the most competitive players you'll see.
Yeah.
The first person to dive for a loose ball, the first person to get in your grill on defense, and the combination of the two is kind of where the Colonials are at now post-Artemis leadership-wise.
Well, Vince, thank you very much for joining us. You can find Vince Russo's articles about the women's basketball team on rmucenturymedia.com, and you can also listen to Vince at various times right here on rmuradio.com.
Thanks for having me, guys. Yeah, thanks for having me.
I think it's going to do it for us. We want to thank Chris Capella and John Fisher as well for joining us today. For Nick Bozzelli, who is God knows where right now. For Mike Funyak, who is currently in Cleveland covering the team. Dante, can we get an update on the club hockey?
It's 5-1 over.
No.
6-6. It is 6-2 in the third period. Niagara over Robert Morris is ACHA Division I club team.
Yeah, kind of regretting that update right now.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we're going to put a bow on this show. Thank you again for listening. Off next week because of spring break, but hey, you can catch us in 2 Thursdays. And you've been listening to Army Chat on Army Radio, your campus, your voice.